Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson. Lori spends her days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. She talks to students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. She's here to share their stories along with other insights with you. So let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, this is Lori and welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Today we are going to talk about one of my favorite topics, math. I know you probably thought I was going to say ADHD because that is also one of my favorite topics, but we're going to talk about math today. So I have a really special guest. I met Heidi at the Learning Disability Association conference a couple weeks ago, and she is a math tutor and has an amazing math website too. I've been looking through it and she's got some great information, but Heidi is here today and the name of her company is Mathtastic, which I love. Hi, Heidi. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So can we just start out really just can you just tell us a little bit about you and sort of how you landed in the place you are today?
Sure, absolutely. So I actually started out in sciences. I have a degree in zoology and a master's in environmental education, and started off by teaching environmental education in camps and such and running environmental education programs. And from that led me to teaching in a Montessori school. I was the first Montessori middle school teacher in the state of North Carolina. And that training really shaped how I looked at education. I loved the individualization of Montessori, of meeting the student where they were, a lot of, three-year grade levels in a class really let the child start and finish where they needed to. And that was just really freeing. And from that, I ended up in an IB school most recently, and in teaching middle school math to IB students, the philosophy is very similar in that it's a lot of inquiry-based learning and kind of spoke to me in terms of my background with the Montessori training. But through a few years of doing that, I met students who math just didn't click for them. And even though we had small class sizes and, I had a lot of time to spend individually with them, the traditional methods just weren't really working with them. And I always gravitated towards manipulatives based on my Montessori training, which especially in the preschool level for the math curriculum is just wonderful and based totally on manipulatives. But I still wasn't kind of hitting the mark on with every kid. And so I kind of looked, especially after the pandemic, I saw a lot of anxiety and I saw a lot of just it not clicking for students. And so I found training on dyscalculia. And over the next 3 years, I spent every summer taking another module of training. And that just shaped how I approach teaching math to every student. And so I did that for a few years, and then it came time for me to kind of step out of the classroom. And in doing so, I really wanted to continue to provide a service to those kids that it just wasn't working for them in a traditional manner. And so that's where Mathtastic was formed. And I always prided myself on math being as fun as possible for every kid. And it is still math, but we like to make it attainable and reachable for everybody. And so that's kind of how I came to be where I am now.
So we talked a little bit earlier before we started recording about, I kind of see math struggles come in three different varieties, right? So you have kids that have math gaps, just gaps, holes. You see kids that have a true math learning disability like dyscalculia, and then you see the kids that have a lot of math anxiety. And sometimes those overlap, but the math anxiety, I think, is probably the most frustrating one. Why do you feel like there's so much anxiety for kids around math? We don't hear about reading anxiety or science anxiety.
But Exactly. Very true. But we also, I think, put a very different emphasis on learning to read than we do on math.
Probably.
And so I think, you know, we as a as parents, you know, we would be all over a student who wasn't catching on to reading. You know, we read with our kids every night. We have reading time, drop everything and read during school. We have reading part. Yeah. We have all of that, right? We don't have any of that for math. And in fact, a lot of parents put some of their math anxiety, you know, on their kids without knowing it, because the parents are, well, I'm not a math person, or that was always hard for me too, or, you know, or I don't understand this homework and this student is in third grade. So that puts a lot of pressure on a kid. Well, if my parent can't do this, how am I going to do it, right? How am I going to understand it? And so, you know, I think we inadvertently, to some extent, the adults in a student's life can kind of contribute to that.
I would agree. I also think, too, if you think about math, a lot of kids believe there's just one way to do it. And if they don't understand that one way, then they're not going to do it right. And so it's a lot of pressure on that amount of time you're spending in your math class to make sure you really understand it and can duplicate it. And math is something you can duplicate without ever understanding it, right?
Yeah. So you can fake it quite easily, at least until third or fourth grade. And that's typically where we see the rubber meet the road. And so those students who just don't naturally gravitate towards understanding the concepts of math have been able to get by counting on their fingers, you know, doing all kinds of different things, memorizing without really understanding. But everybody hits a wall, and then it kind of comes full circle for them, and their strategies don't work for them anymore.
Exactly. So do you feel like you see a little bit of all of those things? You see kids that have the math gaps, math disabilities, and the math anxiety
overlaying? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And I think it's very difficult. The math gaps are easier to tease out in that, especially if the student is still fairly, you know, young, early middle school or before, it's fairly easy to close those gaps. And that's a fairly short term kind of intervention. But those are few and far between. The most of them are the anxiety piece with the math disability piece. And those, you know, you're in it for the long haul. And that's one of the things that I also wanted to provide for parents was a partnership of being able to advocate for their student and their student's needs with the school, and also, you know, be a resource for the parents in that regard. And that's a specific joy I love about being able to tutor a student one-on-one is I don't have to be concerned necessarily if I'm hitting the mark with every student. I just need to advocate for that one student and hit the mark with them. And that's very freeing.
Yeah, absolutely. So oftentimes what I hear parents say is that when they sit down to help their student with math, their student will often say, that's not how the teacher taught. That's not how the teacher taught it. So do you run up against that? And then how do you sort of help kids understand that there are more than one way to, you know, solve the problem?
Absolutely. Yes. So I try really hard. I spend a lot of time prepping for each one of my tutoring sessions. And part of that is the parents sending me homework ahead of time. A lot of the books are online, so I have access to those textbooks also. So I am looking at what they are learning, how it's being approached for them. And either I can build on that and help them with the pieces of that they didn't understand from class, or I can go the other direction and say, I think this way works better for you to understand, and pull in my own resources to do that. So it just depends on the situation.
Do you find that once the student grasps the concept, then they can see that there were several routes to get there and that they can understand the way they learned in class along with the way that they learned through you?
You know, that's a really great analogy. And what I see actually in a lot of math classrooms these days is there's a swing towards, here are all the different ways we can approach this problem, right? And for a kid with a math learning disability or anxiety, that's actually more anxiety approaching. Wait a minute.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. So I actually like to funnel it down to, here's the way I think you, knowing you and how you learn, how this works best in your brain. And then once we have that, now we can look at, hey, how else could we think about that? Or how do you know your answer is reasonable? Or how could we check that in a different way? And then bring in all the different concepts. But I find that it's more reassuring to the student to be able to say, I know how to do this, and I know how to do it this way, and I understand this, and now I can expand on this instead of the other way around.
No, that you're exactly right. Now that you say that, I do hear parents complaining, for the most part, about the fact that they are presenting one concept in so many different ways. The kids are just, if math isn't their thing, if that's not where their confidence falls, then they feel very lost.
Yeah, a lot more specific anchor charts that I'll pull for the students, and a lot more, again, manipulative-based, concrete kinds of things first. And then certainly we want to build that number sense. And certainly we want to understand, hey, why does my answer make sense? But if I'm asked to come up with five different ways to come up with, to figure out an answer first, and I don't know one way, then that's really makes it even worse for me.
Do you feel like we're in the general classroom setting, are we using fewer and fewer manipulatives, or do you feel like that's still a part of everyday learning? Probably more in elementary school, I would think, than middle school and high school. Do you see them still using a lot of manipulatives?
I don't. And in fact, I see a lot of online-based books. I see very little paper and pencil anymore, even at the elementary level, but certainly in the middle school. So many students don't have a physical book. Some of them don't even have an online book. There's no paper and pencil happening anymore. And that for my students is really a struggle for them.
I can't imagine trying to do math without paper and pencil. I have had a couple kids recently, actually, now that you say that, they do their math on like a Word document or you know, online somehow. And I that baffles me on, but again, I'm old school, paper, pencil, manipulatives, you know.
Absolutely.
Do you see a lot of kids still relying on like multiplication charts? Are they even providing that kind of stuff?
Only when I, you know, suggest it. Most of the time, there's kind of a divide too with middle school students as to, no, I have to do everything long division, long, you know, tedious multiplication, or no, I can use a calculator for everything. And there's kind of a divide for that. And I think there's a time and a place, certainly, for a calculator, especially for students who they didn't get those math facts solid for whatever reason. Let's take that out of the picture and let's understand the concepts. But then, as I say, a calculator is a tool, not an answer machine. So we still have to be, we have to know and understand what we're putting into the tool.
So that was going to be my next question, is at what point, because we have a lot of people, a lot of parents that are very like, we are not going to cheat and use a calculator. It's not going to be our crutch. But at what point does it become okay to utilize a calculator, like you said, as a tool. What I mean, certainly not like third grade, because you're still learning what multiplication is, right? In theory. But correct. At what point are you like, okay, it's time that we stop getting hung up on what 5 times 7 is and we use a calculator? Where is that line?
Well, yeah. So, again, that varies a lot with each student and where they are and what skill they're being asked to learn. But I also find that a lot of the textbooks use way more complicated numbers than they need to, you know, if we are a sixth grader and we are beginning to understand how to solve an algebraic equation, and now we're going to throw in decimals and fractions just cause.
I agree.
I don't see the purpose of that so much as, okay, we're now practicing a skill of how do we undo an equation? How do we understand what the variable means and all of those? Okay, well, we're going to practice that skill. And if we come to a tricky division with fractions or decimals or whatever, then let's go ahead and get that answer with a calculator so that we can continue on what we're learning. A lot of times also, I will just make the numbers easier for them. Because again, that's not the skill we're practicing. We're not practicing division with decimals. We are practicing solving an algebraic equation. So that's kind of where I also draw the line. And then I can also gauge with my students is, you know, there's a fatigue factor coming in here. We've been in school all day. Now we have another hour of math that we need to do. And, you know, they may be motivated to get their homework done so that they don't have to do it independently without me.
Sure.
So I pick and choose, I guess, is the short answer to that.
Do you see that a lot of teachers are allowing calculators earlier and earlier?
It really depends. It really depends. You know, as I said, there's ones that will never, you know, that make every calculation is by hand. And then there's others that it becomes a crutch on the student for the student.
Okay. So can we talk about math word problems for a minute? That seems to be like the thing. That, yeah. It's like everybody's kryptonite, right? Math word problems. Because now we're bringing reading into the picture, right? And we're bringing in understanding the math vocabulary and understanding what information is needed and what's not needed. So what are some methods or what are some strategies that you give to students to help when they, because everybody's doing them. We're doing them all the way up into algebra, calculus, all that. Word problems don't ever seem to go away.
Oh, and we're starting really, really young with that when we're still building reading skills. And they're complicated and they're unnecessarily complicated also. And so, unfortunately, there isn't a formula. There's a lot of them out there. We do cubes, we do boxes, we underline, we circle, we highlight, and that just becomes, I underlined, circled, and highlighted, and now I see some numbers and I'm going to do something with them. It doesn't, in my experience, it doesn't really help the student. And so in general, we read it and then we read it again and then we write down what we know and we organize the information. And then if we still don't know what operation is being asked for, we make a simpler problem. So I had one yesterday with a student that had to do with money, and it was a two-stepper in fifth grade. And first we had to multiply with decimals for money, and then we had to subtract from a $5 bill to see how much change we got. And the student wasn't really seeing that, but as soon as I said, well, what if it costs $3 and you gave them a $5 bill, how much change would you get? And all of a sudden they said, well, of course, $2. Well, how'd you get that? I subtracted. Okay, so that's what we're going to do in this problem. And so then we can use the harder numbers that they gave us, of course, because the candy costs 63 cents instead of, you know, something nice and easy. And we bought five of them. So, that in general, and then you always have to go back and read the question, because of course, the answer to step one is one of your answer choices.
Always.
But that's
always
not the question that was being asked. Always. Always. So that's another good example of where a student can, you know, get really frustrated and have a lot of anxiety because they actually did the math right. They did everything right. They just didn't answer the question that was being asked. So there's a lot of skill involved in that. And if you weren't successful in that, starting back in third grade and now you're in fifth and sixth grade, you've got a lot to overcome in that.
I'm curious, and I just thought of this while you were telling me about the money word problem. Do you see kids struggling more with money because we don't use cash anymore? Like, kids aren't going to the store with a $5 mm-hmm. bill and paying for something. They're using their phone, Apple Pay or whatever. So it's so not applicable anymore, which is so sad to me. But we're teaching it. But like recognizing coins? Come on.
Right. Right. And yes, and I see that also, especially in the concept of a quarter. You know, so you used to be able to say, well, everybody knew that four quarters equal a dollar. So that means 24, five times four equals, but that's not a given anymore. And mm-hmm. so now when you start talking, converting fractions to decimals, we don't have a foundation for understanding. You know, 10 dimes equal a dollar. So therefore 1/10, right? They don't have that foundation anymore, let alone with quarters or nickels. And so, yeah, it is a little bit more challenging. The same thing goes for an analog clock.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh, right. Telling time.
We still have all these elapsed time problems. But the kids never learned how to tell time on a regular clock anyway.
We've seen that with even just with the tests that we administer, the couple that make them read an analog clock or recognize coins, pictures of coins, not even the, you know, it's so abstract to them.
Yep.
Math vocabulary. How important is it to study math vocabulary?
Well, so that's another thing, like that's another where, you know, do you study it in isolation? Just like, do you learn your multiplication tables in isolation? Do you just learn them? Or do you learn them in context? And I advocate for learning it in context. Just, you know, math is another language. By the time you hit sixth grade, you are translating that language, into your native language, and so that requires understanding what these words mean. Now, does that, you know, certainly having a word bank and going back to those word problem kinds of things, you know, most of the time and means add, but it doesn't always, you know, and right. of means multiply, but it doesn't always. And so again, it's easy to say, oh, you have to just know these words, but it's harder to put that into practice.
No, that's very true. I didn't think about it that way, but you're right. You're right, because it doesn't always mean the same thing in every problem. And the application is really where it's the most important. So when you're working with kids that have a diagnosis of dyscalculia, is there sort of an overarching theme that you use, or is it really just more individualized for each student?
Yes and no. Yes, in that I'm going to use hands-on manipulatives as much as possible. And that even is when I'm tutoring them virtually. I send them a magnetic whiteboard and magnetic manipulatives so that they can hold them up for me. Or we use document cameras or, you know, a variety of different ways. Of course, it depends on where they are also.
Sure.
So yes, we're always going to go back to the concrete as much as humanly possible. But then there are so many, you know, for one student, they understand place value like you wouldn't believe. And another student never understands place value and really struggles with that a lot. And so it just depends a lot on the individual. And so it's just learning that student and how they learn best, making it as accessible for them and as entertaining as possible for them. I have a student who loves to draw. She's a great artist. And so we do color by number. Like we get an answer right. She draws a picture. I have the same picture. I can't draw, so I use a picture that that I've found already. And then we color in a different part. Every time we get a right answer, we color in a part.
That's clever.
And you know, we go from there. So it just depends a little bit. It's a puzzle. It's definitely a puzzle, and there isn't just one path. As much as we would love it to be.
But it's amazing that the difference it can make for a student when they just start to feel that little bit of success. You know, just that Absolutely. Little bit can be such a fire.
Absolutely. You know, success breeds success. And if we can just have little wins, you know, along the way. And the other thing that I try to always remember too is to acknowledge with the student where they came from. So I oftentimes will say, do you remember when this was hard for you? Do you remember Right. last summer when we worked on division or fractions or whatever forever and ever and ever? And normally, and most of the time they say, no, I don't remember that.
I blocked it.
But also they don't necessarily recognize their success. You know, it's yeah. to them, it's every day. They're you know, trying to do it every day. And so I think taking those moments of pointing out to them, do you remember when this was hard for you? Do you remember when this didn't make any sense? And now look at you. And because that doesn't always translate onto all those standardized tests and all the different Mm-mm. things they're being asked to do in school. And so having that relationship, that long-term relationship with the students and being able to reflect with them back on their growth is super rewarding.
What ages and grades do you work with?
I typically work from fourth grade through Math 1, Algebra 1 is okay. kind of my wheelhouse. Most of my students are middle school students.
That's where the magic happens, right? That's where I feel like that's what I used to teach. So the whole decimals, fractions, percentages, all that, yeah. the pre-algebra, that's where everyone's yep. like, no, thank you, yep. I'm out. And then you also do some homeschool classes for if someone's interested in getting some extra help as far as teaching math to their kids if they're homeschooling. A lot of parents will homeschool, but math may not be their thing either.
Absolutely. I love doing that. I love being a resource to schools. I have a relationship with a school where I come in and help them. And if they have students who they're like this, you know, we've tried all of these things and we don't quite understand where the breakdown is, I can do that. I absolutely love it when a school will allow me to actually take over math for a student for a period of time and do it during the school day where we're not adding on to that student, you know, after a full day of school. That's wonderful. That's few and far between, but every once in a while it does happen. And that's great because they're really putting that student's needs first. And
absolutely,
so it's wonderful when that comes together.
I love that. Yeah, I agree. I think if we can tackle some of these issues during their math class and not after school, once they've already been through a full day of school and are exhausted, if we can actually hit them right where they need it, instead of them sitting through a math class that's doesn't make any sense to them, if we can work with them during that time and help fill some of those gaps so that eventually they can get back in and it all makes sense. But if we don't do that, they're just going to continually feel behind. And so it's very defeating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These kids are the most resilient kids you've ever met and hardworking. And I feel for them. I really do. Math was never a super struggle for me, but it wasn't something that came easily. Also, I remember geometry in high school and just not understanding whatsoever. And so I kind of tap into that sometimes, in that, you know, this, you know, they assume that I've always loved math and that, you know, I'm a math whiz or something. And that's not the case.
And I think more that you understand that kids just learn differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that is so important. So if parents are interested in your services or schools, is your website the best way for them to find you?
Yes. And there's a contact me on my website. And I will get back to them. Absolutely.
I will include the link to your site in our show notes so that everyone can have access to it.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you for talking math. I love this and I love what you do. And I have kids every day that would benefit from your services. And I feel like the struggle with math is real. The anxiety around math is real. And I feel like we just need to get kids more confident. And I think the confidence breeds success.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here today. Listeners, if you guys have any questions, I will include the link to Heidi's website in our show notes. If you have questions for me, you know, you can always reach out to letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. And if you know somebody who's got a student who's struggling with math, please share this episode with them. I think they'll find it very enlightening. So thank you, Heidi, for being here. I appreciate you, and I hope everyone has a great rest of your day, and we'll see you guys back here next time. Bye.
Thanks, Lori. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.